Good morning. You guys doing good? Okay. So anyways, if you guys are new with us, we are so excited for you to be here with us. We think you came on a great Sunday because, as Pastor Ned said, we are starting a brand new series this morning that I'm so excited to do, you know, to share with you. And the reason is really twofold. One is because I think this is, like I said, a great time. I love it when we can start a new series together and everyone's kind of on the same page. It's so hard, you know, when you go into a movie halfway through or at the end of the movie. And so what we do is kind of we package a series, kind of like one long conversation, and we break it up into chunks, and so it's great to start off all together, so I'm excited that you're here, or maybe you're listening online this morning. But the other reason that I'm so excited is that oftentimes it's kind of hard to maybe, for some people, wrap our minds or arms around really what it is that we are called to do and to be as Christ followers and this journey that we're on, and so I really want to help make sense of this whole process, this whole journey that we're going to be talking about together. Because when it comes to the position like mine, I've noticed that when I talk to people, when it comes to faith, when it comes to, you know, what does it mean to follow Jesus, when it comes to issues that are brought up, like suffering and tragedies and all those things, it's hard to really understand it all. And oftentimes, I have found that when people try to explain the Christian life or the Christian walk, whatever you describe it, they often use a word picture that I think has some merit, but I think is kind of falls short of really what the Christian life is all about. The word picture that oftentimes people use to describe the Christian life is like a path, right? It's kind of like a path. You know, life is like a highway, you know, and I want to ride it all night long, right? Or, you know, it's kind of like a road, and Jesus, you just take the wheel, right? It's kind of like a path. It's a road kind of thing, and that's what we're on, and we're all on this journey together, and we're all kind of following Jesus on this journey, on this hike, or, you know, on this trail. And I love the idea. I love that imagery of kind of like a path or a trail, because I love the fact I'm a backpacker, and our guys just got done backpacking a couple weeks ago, which was fun together. But I love the imagery of just kind of following Jesus through the trail, you know, over the streams, up the mountains, to the grandmother's house we go kind of thing. But you know, that is helpful in some ways, but I think it really kind of falls short in other ways. And so I think I'm guilty of using this illustration, but I think there's a better illustration than we can use. Because when we're talking about life on a path or life as a path, see, when you're taking a path, the only thing that you expect to change on the path or anything is what? The scenery, right? The scenery that when you're up on the mountain, you know, or you're walking through the trail, you're only expecting the scenery to change, the circumstances to change. In fact, that, you know, when it comes to American Christianity, we really expect the scenery not just to change, but the scenery to get better, right? Because that's oftentimes what we think about the Christian life, is that, hey, we said yes to God, so God should start saying yes to us. And for some people, that's what you've been taught, that as a Christ follower, your life is going to get better following Jesus. The scenery is going to get better. The air is going to improve. The scenery, the mountaintop kind of experience is going to happen for you. And it's just going to get better scenery, better circumstances, better situations as following Jesus. And when that did not happen for you, chances are that's when you started, you know, pulling back from your faith. That's when you said, I'm not sure about all this, or I'm not as passionate as I used to be, because there was a tragedy, there was a loss, there was some financial crisis, and this is like, I didn't sign up for this. I signed up to follow Jesus on a path, and I thought this path was going to make my scenery better, my situations better, my circumstances better. And when it didn't, that's when you started pulling back, because that's what you didn't sign up for. And so this morning, I want to talk about, maybe there's another illustration out there that's a little bit better. What if it is not so much of a path as it is a process? And it's not that we just need to follow Jesus along this path to get to the end. What if we need to all undergo a process together? Because here is the difference, and it's a slight difference, but it is I think a big, big difference when it comes to how we view things. That when you're not, you know, when you're taking a path, the only thing that you expect to change is the scenery. But when you're taken through a process, the only thing that you expect to change is what? You, right? That the process really kind of stays the same, but you begin to change. And I think this is so big, and so, you know, this is going to be so helpful for us when we all kind of get on the same page, is because when I'm on a path, you know, Jesus, I just want you to make my circumstances better. That's why I'm following you. That's why, you know, I want. And so, you know, that's kind of our attitude. But when we're on a process, it's like, no. Everything that is happening, Jesus, I understand that this is a process that you're doing to change me. And I'm telling you, when we can get this, when we can grab onto this concept, when that becomes our word picture, suddenly things just look different. Our responses are different. Because when things happen to us, the circumstances, we would say, when we're on a path, we would say the circumstances are really just happening to us, right? And this is the thing that I get oftentimes from people who are struggling. It's like, well, why would God allow these things to happen to me? Why are these bad things happening to me? And that's oftentimes what I get. But when you understand that you are a part of a process, not just on a path, but you are being, you know, taken through a process, then suddenly that becomes not what is happening to me, but the circumstances of life are really happening for me. And I'm telling you, when we can embrace this idea, this can be really going to change how we respond and how we handle and how we deal with so much. Now, I could just tell you this was my idea, but it's really not my idea. Where do I get all of this from? This really comes from a guy who experienced more pain and more suffering and more heartache than maybe all of us combined in this room. Here's a guy who, you know, spent his life following after Jesus to faraway lands, and he ends up being beaten and stoned and imprisoned and persecuted and, you know, all these terrible things. He experienced more tragedy, more loss than maybe all of us combined. And yet, as he walked through all of that and as he looked on the other side, he was able not just to be content, but he was able to thank God for all of those situations and circumstances. He was able to walk out praising God. And it's like, I would love that, right? And maybe some of you, or maybe you're like, I don't know if I buy into everything, but wouldn't it be nice to walk through like a tragedy and not be so bitter, not to be so angry, but walk out the other side going, man, I can actually be kind of thankful for this. I can actually look and say, wow, this was there's something good with all of this. Wouldn't you like to have that? And so this guy that we're going to be talking about understood this idea of life is like a process. Now, this person that I'm talking about is, of course, the Apostle Paul, and he, you know, experienced so much heartache and tragedy and pain, and yet he was able to look back and go, this was all part of this process that I'm so thankful that I was part of. And so we're going to look at what he talks about, this process, because not only does he describe the process in some ways, but he describes ultimately where this process for us is headed. And so that's what I want to invite you to look at with me this morning. So if you have your Bibles, turn with me to the book of Romans. This is Paul's letter to the church, the Christians living in Rome. That's why we call it Romans. And we're really going to just look at three verses this morning. One of them is very popular. You probably, as soon as I start reading it, you will probably say, I've heard that one before. Some of you have it memorized. Some of you have it on your wall at home or on a t-shirt somewhere. It is often quoted. Unfortunately, because it's so often quoted, it is oftentimes misquoted or misunderstood. And so we're going to look at exactly what Paul was talking about this morning. But before we talk about these three verses, I want to give you just a minute of context to what Paul is addressing, because the book of Romans is written, the letter of Romans really was written around just 57 AD. And if you understood what was happening in that time, it is so helpful to understand why Paul was writing what he's writing. See, 8 years before 57 AD, Claudius the emperor made an edict, and the edict stated that all Jewish people were to leave the city of Rome. So you can imagine all Jewish people, including Jewish Christians, because the church was made up of Gentile Christians, everybody who's not Jewish, and Jewish Christians. And so the Jewish Christians had to pack up, leave everything behind. They gave up their jobs, their families, their careers, everything you can imagine, and had to go find a new life outside the city of Rome. And you can imagine how, you know, upsetting that was for everybody. Well, 5 years after this edict was, you know, created, Claudius dies, and therefore a new emperor came with new edicts, and he allowed the Jewish Christians back into the city. And so you can imagine just how much, you know, upsetting all this would have been, having to get a new life and coming back. And, you know, they were just experienced all kinds of hardships. And so all the Jewish people came back, including the Jewish Christians. And so this is what the context is with this book, this letter. It's a lot to do with suffering. In fact, Paul talks about suffering in verse 18, verse 35, verse 36 of Romans chapter 8. And so this is just kind of the context that he's writing in. And they're asking the same questions you and I would. It's like, why would God allow this to happen? Why would God have me, uproot me from my family, from my career, from all these things? I have to move, then I got to move back, and all those kind of things. Why? And so Paul really kind of addresses all of that when he talks about what he's going to talk about. And so we're just going to jump into this letter this morning. It's kind of like, you know, midway through. We're just kind of jumping in. I invite you to read the whole letter this week if you want to. But here's what Paul Right. And so again, we're only looking at the three verses, and the first one you probably have heard of before, but here's what he says. He says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. You've probably heard that before, chances are. And again, this is oftentimes used, and especially in times of difficulty and pain and suffering and loss, people will bring this verse up. But oftentimes, I think it is misunderstood. So we're going to kind of unpackage this a little bit this morning. And so if you're reading this from the NIV, this is what, you know, originally we have from the NIV here. It's really more of a paraphrase, because if you're translating straight from the Greek, Greek to English is hard, it's wooden, it's really hard to read. But if you're going to do that, here's how this first part would really look. He would say it this way, and we know those loving him, God works together all things for good. Now, there's a slight variation to that, you know, how it's worded, but I think it's important to note. And the reason I bring this up is because there are certain implications, certain things that I think we need to address before we talk about what the good really is that Paul is referring to. But when Paul says that God works together all things for good, here's what one thing that he means by this. He means that all things means that Christians are not exempt from anything. Okay, that Christians are not exempt from cancer, Christians are not exempt from losing a child, Christians are not exempt from, you know, financial crisis or suffering or pain or death. Christians are not exempt from that. Everything that happens to the rest of the world will also happen to Christians. This is, you know, this is just the way it is. And if you've been sold a bill of goods that says otherwise, then, you know, just look around. You know, I think experience will tell us that Christians are not exempt from anything. In fact, Paul will, you know, talk about, you know, how they have to endure suffering in verse 35. He talks about the kind of suffering that they're enduring, the hardships, the nakedness, the famine, the sword. You know, we are not exempt from anything. And so we just need to acknowledge that. Just because you're following God, just because you said yes to God, doesn't mean suddenly now you're exempt from something that, you know, everybody else has to deal with. We have to go through everything just like everybody else from a worldly perspective. We have, you know, nothing different as far as the circumstances that can happen to us will happen to everybody. Terrible things will happen, has happened, will happen. That's just the nature of the beast. So when we talk about all things, that's what Paul means. Paul means good things, but also really terrible things that we just need to acknowledge and embrace. And that's kind of the bad news with all this. But here's the good news part of it. Though bad things happen, God will eventually work it out for good. Now, there's two big implications when Paul talks about how God will work things out for good that we need to talk about. The first one is that he's saying when anything good works, or anything that happens, any bad thing that works itself out to good, he says that's God doing it. Because nothing in this world just happens to work itself out for good on its own. That our world is full of death and decay and disease. Things break down. Things get destroyed. Things just go from good to bad. Things don't just go from bad to good on their own. It just doesn't happen. And so when anything good happens, he's saying it's really that God, by his grace, that is doing the work. And so if we come into this world thinking, well, you know, we should expect, you know, to have a good life and, you know, health. And he says, that is not the way that's not what you should expect. You should expect disease. You should expect decay. You should expect things to fall apart. But if things don't do that, if things are brought together, if things are healed, if a marriage is restored, all those things, that is actually God who's doing the work. It's only by God's grace. Because the rest of the world, everything is really just groaning. You know, that's what he talks about. And I think verse 18, he talks about, or 22, he talks about this idea the world is groaning and everything is just longing to be restored. He says that's the natural just set of things right now. That's the way it is. And so if anything good happens, it's God who is doing the good. And so that's the first implication. But he also says, when he talks about God will eventually work it out for good, he's also saying that there are bad things in this world. There are bad things. And these bad things are still bad things. And here's what I mean by that. But if we look, you know, if we look at situations and go, well, you know, God's going to work that out for good, what oftentimes we're tempted to think is, well, it's really not so bad. Those things really aren't so bad. Just look at the silver lining of things. Just look for the positiveness, you know, kind of thing of it. Look at what, you know, God can do. And it's really a blessing in disguise. Anybody ever heard that phrase before? It's really a blessing in disguise, you know. So just hold on, you know, just kind of wait. It's really not that bad. Now, I understand why people say that, but that's really not what Paul is saying. Paul's saying bad things are really bad things. In fact, you know, Jesus, when he got the news of Lazarus' death, many of you guys know the story, right? His good friend Lazarus was dead or was sick. He doesn't go to save Lazarus. In fact, you know, Lazarus dies. Jesus waits a couple days. He goes to the funeral, which has been going on for days now, and he gets to the town, and what happens? Everybody's mourning. Everybody's weeping. The sister comes out and gives Jesus what for not being there to save their brother, you know, and what does Jesus do? Who knows? I mean, he knows that in just a moment, he's going to rescue Lazarus out from the dead. He's going to save the day. Everyone's going to take all their weeping and turn into celebration. Everything's going to, you know, just be hunky-dory in just a moment. But what does he do? He rolls into town, and he doesn't say, guys, you think this is a tragedy. You think this is, you know, a story with an unhappy ending. No, guys, this is a happy ending story. You guys need to celebrate. You guys need to rejoice. This is really a blessing in disguise. No, he doesn't do that. He goes into town, and what does he do? He gets angry, and he weeps with those who are weeping. Even though he knows in just a moment he's going to rescue and save the day, and everyone's going to be happy, he weeps. Why? Because he knows bad things, these tragedies, sin, death, disease, all this suffering is really bad. And in that moment, he weeps with those who weep to acknowledge it is really bad. And, you know, I don't want to labor this point too much, but guys, when we have people who are experiencing tragedies in their life, I understand when we go up to them, we don't often know what to say. We don't often know how to respond. And we're trying to, you know, help the situation. We're trying to, you know, make them feel better. And so in our attempts to do that, we try to make this, you know, try to create the silver lining in the cloud. You know, hey, you know, you didn't really like that job anyways, right? You know, the boss was kind of a jerk. You know, why? And we try to, you know, and we have all the best intentions. But for some time, we just need to just do what Jesus did and just acknowledge, hey, this is a bad thing. I'll just sit with you on this for a while. This is a tragedy, you know. And I know God can work out all these things for good, and we're going to talk about that, but a bad thing is a bad thing. It's and this is why Jesus came, you know, and he acknowledged the death, the disease, and this is why he suffered, because he hated it so much, and he was willing to acknowledge that bad things are just bad things. And so he says, listen, God will work all things out for good, but he's not promising that they're really not that bad, or God's going to keep you from bad things. What this idea is that God is promising that he will eventually turn everything into good, meaning over time. And for some of us, we're like, okay, great, we're going to put God on the clock here. So God, I just got diagnosed with cancer. So how is this a good thing? I'll give you a week to turn this into a good thing. But Paul is saying that God will eventually turn everything in the totality of things, God will eventually turn it out for good or make it good. And what does it mean good? What does he mean by that? God will turn everything, you know, God will eventually make it good. Well, to help us understand that, before we get into the next verse, I want to read a quote from John Newton. Here's what he says. He says, everything is necessary that God sends our way. Nothing can be necessary that he withholds. And here's what he means, and I think here's what Paul means. That when God withholds certain good from you, it might be good in the short term, right? You would say, man, this would be really good in the short term. But what God knows is that in the long term, it won't be good for you. In the long term, it will ruin you. It will destroy you. And so he withholds the good, the things that you think are, you know, are good right now. He withholds those things because ultimately he knows that's not for your ultimate good. And the same is true that God brings things your way. God allows things to happen in your way to really cure you from really what can destroy you and ruin you. You see, when it comes to what ruins us, what destroys us, it's never our circumstances that really ultimately can ruin us or destroy us. What ruins us is what's going on in the inside of us. What ruins us is selfishness. What ruins us is pride. What ruins us is lust. Those are the things that can destroy us. And that's what God is most concerned about. He's not so much concerned about the circumstances, because two people can walk through the same circumstances and have a completely different outcome and all that. But what ruins us, destroys us, is what's happening on the inside of us, our inner self, our inner essence. And this is what Paul is going to be getting at. He says, what's the good that God does? It's really something that's going on inside of you. And here's what he says next in verse 29. He says this, for, meaning everything that I just said, right? God works all things out for good. For the connection, for those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. Now, I know, you know, before we get into talk about what, again, this good really is, we have to talk about these two really loaded words, foreknew and predestined, because those two words can be a really big distraction for people and can really kind of be divisive and all that. So what does he mean when God says that Paul says that God foreknew? When we think of foreknowledge, we think of foresight. We think of, you know, like he knows beforehand, right? But when it comes to knowledge in the Old Testament and New Testament, when the authors are writing something about knowledge, it's really a knowledge about relation. It's a relational term. To know somebody, you can know about somebody and not really know somebody. To really know somebody, you have to experience somebody. And so knowledge oftentimes is very much a relationship kind of term. And I think what Paul is saying is not that God just foreknew, had the foresight, but he foreloved us. And I think this is so important to understand, that God foreloved us before we even got a chance to love him, that he loved us first, and because of that, we can love him. But there was a foreknowledge, a forelove that came with all of this, that we need to understand in order for us to really to trust the process that is to come. For those God foreknew or foreloved, he also predestined. Now, again, I know this is a loaded term, this idea of predestination and predestined, and if you have questions or concerns, go talk to Pastor Ned later about this, email him about all this stuff. But I know this can be disheartening for some, talking about predestination, but really Paul is trying to be a comfort for everyone. He's trying to comfort these people. He's trying to say, listen, this process that God is putting you on and putting you through, it's fixed. It's almost guaranteed. That's what predestined, it's fixed. It's certain. And he says, it's supposed to be a comfort, meaning that God is working, God is doing things, and it's going to happen. And so you can take heart in that. You can have confidence that God has set his sight on something and he will complete it. He will get the job done. And what is this job? What is this process? What is God wanting to do with all of us? And that comes this next word, that God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. Now, when we think of the word conform, we think of external behavior. We think of external, you know, just changing. But when he talks about this word conformed, it really comes from this Greek word morphe, which is where we get our word what? Morphe. Metamorphosis, right? Metamorphosize, you know, and all those fun kind of ways you say it. Metamorphosis. And what does metamorphosis mean? It means to transform, right? You become kind of something new altogether. And so what he's saying is that God is really working to transform us into what? Into the image of his son. He says, ultimately, that is the end of the process. That is God's goal, that he wants you to become like his son. Now, I think this is so important to clarify as we talk about becoming a Christ follower or those who are Christ followers. When we think about the essence of Christianity, we don't fall in love, and we're not inviting you to fall in love with a certain set of rules. We're not inviting you to fall in love with a certain morality. What we're doing, what we're asking you to be a part of and inviting you to, and what we hopefully are on the process of doing, we have fallen in love with Jesus himself. That when we look at Jesus in the text, just as the first century, you know, first followers fell in love with Jesus face to face, when we look at Jesus from the text, when we read about his life, when we see just how compassionate he was, how caring he was, how gracious he was, how, you know, there was conviction, there was boldness, he was all about truth, and yet he was all about grace. When we see that availability, when we see that people from all walks of life were comfortable coming to him and hearing and listening and sitting with him, when we see all that, you know, all the splendor, all the glory, and when we look at that, we look and go, I want that. I want that. That is how you live. That is true living. It's not, I just want something from Jesus. I want Jesus. I want that to be my life. I want his essence to be my essence. And so we need to understand that when he's talking about this process here, whether good things externally happen or bad things externally happen, what is happening is that God is taking these things and he is molding you. He is developing you. He is changing you. He is just doing all these things, polishing you to become like his son. He says, I want you to have what he has. I want you to be that available. I want you to be that caring. I want you to be that gracious, that kind, that bold, that, you know, that gentle. I want you to have all of those things too. And so I'm doing these things as part of the process so that you can become like my son. And as Christ followers, that's what we want, right? I mean, ultimately, that's what we want. That's what we have signed up for. That as a good disciple, right, that's what we want. We want to be like the rabbi. We want to be like Jesus. In fact, I love what Tim Keller said, and I want to give him a lot of credit for, I listened to a lot of his stuff on this and read some stuff, but here's what he wrote. He says, Jesus Christ did not suffer so that you wouldn't have to suffer, but that when you suffer, you will become like And this is a completely different perspective, right? If you're thinking, I'm not going to suffer, or I just want God to change my, situation, change the scenery, change my circumstances, then go on a path with Jesus, But that is not what Jesus calls us on. He calls us to go through a process, to undergo a process where we become more and more and more like him. And Paul says this process is predestined, meaning it's fixed, it's certain. In fact, it's so certain that here's what he says next in the next verse. He says, and those he predestined, he also called, and those he called, he also justified. And those he justified, he also glorified. Now, we have spent time talking about kind of each of these words in different sermons, so I don't really have time to talk about each of these giant theological ideas, but the fact is that we choose God, but beforehand, God somehow chooses us in the background of things. God calls us. We talked about the idea of being justified. That means that we get Christ's righteousness, that we are declared righteousness, and better than just being forgiven, we get everything that Jesus gets. But also, he talks about this idea of being glorified. And I think this is so fascinating because you look at it, and maybe you've caught this, maybe you didn't, but all these words are in the what tense? The past tense, right? And it's like, wait a minute, I get the whole called thing. I get the whole justified, being the past tense. But Paul, don't you mean like will glorify, like in the future tense? Because I look in the mirror and, I don't see so much glory on this thing. What do you mean he also glorified, meaning has already been done? Did you miss tense here? What are you doing, Paul? And Paul would say, no, I meant this. Because it was predestined, it was so fixed, it was, so guaranteed that I can talk about this like it already has happened. This is like, again, this is supposed to be good news for us, that from God's perspective, that what he is wanting to do with you and in you and through you and conform you into the image of the Son, he said it's so certain that we can talk about it in the past tense. From God's perspective, in a sense, it's already been done. And again, this is so good. This is such a good news for us when we talk about the idea of glory as far as becoming more and more like Jesus. That's what glory means, becoming more and more like him. That when we go through suffering, when we go through trials, when we go through pain, when we understand this weight of glory, this idea of glory, that gives us meaning. That gives everything meaning, even the trials, even the difficulties, even the losses. All of that then is given meaning. Otherwise, it would just be meaningless. But now it has meaning. Now that we can look and go, God, you are actually allowing this, doing, permitting all this so that we can become more and more like you. And suddenly now, it's just a totally different perspective on hardship and heartache. Evil is evil. Tragedy is tragedy. But yet, we can look and go, wow, God, you can actually use this and turn this into good, and you can actually take this and use this to help me become more and more like your son. And Paul actually talks about this idea of, this idea between the glory that we will get and the process that we have to undergo through. In Romans 8:18, he talks about this. He says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. 2 Corinthians 4:16 says this, therefore we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. He says, for our light and momentary troubles, and I think Paul probably had a smile on his face when he wrote that, are achieving for us an eternal glory that outweighs them all. In other words, Paul would say the product, the final product, the end product is worth the process. That you never put something through a process that it's going to come out the other end, less worthier, less expensive. You want something that through a process, it becomes more valuable, not less valuable. And he says, this is the process that God has put you through. You're undertaking. that at the end of the day, God is going to turn you into something more glorious, more splendid, more beautiful than you can ever imagine. And so this process, these light and momentary troubles are just simply light and momentary troubles in the sense that it is just passing. It's fleeting. It's evil. It's tragic. It's heartbreaking, all those things. But yet, God is going to turn that into something great and beautiful and glorious. And again, if you're on a path, you don't get that. When you're on a path, it's just about getting from point A to point B, and, you know, I'm not looking to change, and God, I just want you to change and hopefully make my scenery better. But when you're on a process, when you're undergoing a process, then you can get it. Then you can understand, ah, that's why. Everyone wants to know why me, why now, why. This is the why. This is the why. This is the best why that we got, so that you can be conformed into the image of his son. And so as we kick off the series, I'm very, very excited about it, but we have to really all get on the same page before we can go any further. And so the question is, do you see yourself on a path? Do you see yourself going on a path? Or do you see yourself undergoing a process? And I'm telling you, that will make all the difference in the world. How to handle pain, how to handle suffering, how to even handle the good times and the blessings and all those things. It will help you understand and how to respond to all of that. And so if you believe that you're on a process, here's my next question that we're going to ask, because you need to know. Do you know the process? Do you know the process? That if you agree with me, that okay, God, okay, I'm on this page, it's not really a path, it's a process. Do you know the process? Because if the outcome is going to be similar for everybody, right, if we're all going to come be conformed to the image of God, then the process needs to be kind of similar, right? Similar process, similar outcome. And we can look and say, generally speaking, God puts through, you know, people through similar stages, and there's certain catalysts that we can just trace and track and say, everybody needs to go through this in order to become more and more like Jesus. Do you know those stages? Do you know the path? You know, not the path. Do you know the process? Do you know that? And the reason I ask is not just for your sake, but hopefully you're helping other people in their walk with Christ. Do you know what their next step is? Do you know what their next stage is? Can you help them through the process? This is going to be good for everybody, I think. And then at the last question is simply this. Do you trust the process? Because you can know about it. You know the stages. We can do all that. But do you trust the process? Are you open-handed to say, God, I'm just going to stop resisting you. Every step I take, every turn, it seems like you just surprise me every which way. And you kind of disappoint me because I'm expecting you to do this. And then you do that. God, you know. But are you willing to be open-handed to say, God, I'm trusting you with this process? And God, it's evil, it's tragic, it's painful, or it's good, it's great, it's wonderful, but God, at the end of the day, it's not about the circumstance, it's about what you want to do in me and through me, and how do I respond, and how ultimately you are using this to conform me into the image of your son. God, I'm trusting you with this. And here's how you can trust the process. So you can trust the process, not because it's a great process, not because we think this is the best, you know, whatever. We can trust the process because you can trust the God behind the process. That ultimately, that is where our faith lies. That it's because of the resurrection, it's because of the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus that we can ultimately say, God, you have our best interest in mind. You have our good in mind. That even though the circumstances aren't good, we know that we can trust you with the process, even though we may not choose this for ourselves. So, is it a path or is it a process? Do you know the process and do you trust the process? Let's pray. God, thank you so much that Jesus, you know, went through all of this too. You do not withhold pain, sorrow, tragedy from his life. And he understood every step of the way what you were doing in him and through him and all the rest. And the first followers of Jesus looked at Jesus and saw something that they wanted, not just from Jesus, but they just wanted Jesus himself. God, I pray that that would be our heart's desire, that we want to become more and more like you. And even if that takes pain, even that takes heartache, God, we're willing to go through that because we're trusting you all along the way, that you really do have our best in mind. God, I pray for those right now who are struggling with their faith, who are struggling with, are they even want to jump into this whole idea or not? I pray, Lord, that this series, that they would begin to see you in a different light, begin to see how you move and how you treat us and what you bring into our lives, not as curses, but really, really actually things that will make us more and more like you. God, I pray, Lord, that we would be open-handed with all this, that we stop resisting you every step of the way, that we would be trusting in you more and more. God, we thank you for the good and for the bad. We praise you. We can praise you for that, because we know that ultimately all things work for the good of those who love you. We pray all this in Jesus' precious name. Amen.